Welcome to another episode of Life in Bali, a production of Cuke Audio, a project of Cuke Archives. I'm DC, your host and poobah of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sonor with Doggett Bandita and Feline Cuchita, and maybe soon with dear lovely Katrinka. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable and not suffering economic hardship and able to get out and run around and do anything you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. Our guest today is Anshu Singh, a fascinating woman who's a yoga teacher and a sort of motivational teacher. And she's very uplifting and interesting, and I think you will really enjoy her. And since I know I'm going to blab on for a while, if you want to skip all that and go straight to her, you will find her at 31 minutes and 15 seconds. Let me see what where the virus is at here today. Well, it's after several months of reporting, it's just the numbers were growing so slowly, it was almost stagnant. They're increasing more rapidly now. Now there are 23 deaths in Bali. And it wasn't long ago that there were four, and it remained four for like 6 weeks or something. And there's 1,900 reported cases, including those who are said to have recovered. They say 974 have recovered and 23 have died. So there's about, that leaves about 903 people who are positive and hadn't recovered. And there's this map. This is on the site Safe City Denpasar. Let's see. safecity.denpasarkota.go.id/ID/COVID-19. And so Denpasar, you know, is the capital, the biggest city in Bali. So they have it divided up into like 50 districts. And every single district but one is red. And according to the map color guide, that red one is, it's all in Indonesian, but I know what it's saying. I'm a little confused by it. It says, that means that there's a patient, I guess that means they're in a hospital, who is positive with COVID-19. All right. Now, then there's one that there's a little tiny thing in there, but it's too small to know what it is. There might be a couple of little tiny areas in there that are green. And that's everybody's recovered. But they're so small, I don't know what they are. But there's one area that's purple. And that's where I live, North Sonor. And it says, ODP, Orang Dalam Pengawasan, person in being watched over, yeah, supervision. What is it? This is a person in supervision, and all the rest are that there's patients who are positive. So anyway, this is less critical, less bad, better color than anywhere else in Dimpasar, except maybe that little tiny green area. So, but anyway, that's not important. The important thing is that the numbers are increasing. And you know what? They're talking about opening up now. And there's a definite increase. It's increasing. I mean, there's 23 dead now. This morning it was 20. And it's 1,900 positive. And it was 1,800 something while ago. I mean, it remained in like the 300s for a long time, for over a month. All right. So, yeah, there was a whole thing. David Bodwa, friend in Santa Fe, an old Buddhist friend, sent me a Reuters article on a ceremony in Gangaras, an area near here, a city, and I think Gangarasam's regency. And there was like 1,000 people got together. They're all side by side, praying, thanking in a ceremony, Hindu, thanking, expressing gratitude for the reopening of Bali. And they're all dressed formally in white with little top pieces. And there's men and women. And, of course, the picture featured a couple of boule, a couple of Westerners, a couple, it looked like. And the couple were wearing their masks with their nose exposed. They were next to a man who was wearing his mask properly, but a lot of the people in the picture just had their masks pulled down. They were sitting right next to each other. I thought, this is very interesting. Here they are. When the numbers are going up, getting a whole bunch of people right next to each other to have a ceremony for the reopening of Bali, or, you know, thanking the spirits and the gods and the government and everything for taking care of, but it's going up. I think that a lot of people feel safe because they're in the temple. That's pretty superstitious here. But we'll see. I do not think that's a good sign. Now, Kadek was here today, our housekeeper, and I showed her that. And she not only pointed out that right away, she said, oh, that's not right. She said, that's bad. She said, that's all bad. She said, look, she was pointing, they're not wearing the mask right. They're not social distancing. And then she pointed to the one guy right next to them, who was wearing the mask properly. There were some others. I mean, there were 20 people in the picture or something. But she pointed out that his bowing, the form of his arms was correct. And some other people's were more lax. God, it was just like being in Sin Center. anyway, so we'll see what happens with that. Now, I think the beach is supposed to formally open. Somebody said it's going to open for 3 days. You know, it doesn't matter much to us because they'll let us in anyway. They didn't on Sunday, but Sunday they had some petchalong, like local security people, you know, neighborhood security. Every neighborhood has these petchalong security. You very seldom see police. You see them. Police are out there stopping people and checking their license and stuff. Never moving violation that I know of. All right, anyway, so there was a bunch of petchalong young guys. I think they were novice petchalong by the entrance where I usually go, which is a almost never guarded entrance. And they said, no, don't go in. And I said, when's it going to open? They said, tomorrow. They said, well, maybe. I said, well, I bet you're not here tomorrow. And they laughed. But I've gone right past the busier entrance They're taking money for parking and letting people in, people coming in with their kites. It's kite season. I mean, kites are a big deal here. I mean, there's just kites everywhere. Anyway, so we didn't go in yesterday. I'm sure we could go there today. We've been going a little bit. Very, very few people there, you know. It's really nice. So I think they're going to try to open up. Katrinka's got a reservation to return on the 19th, flying through Doha in Qatar. And I think Qatar is home of Al Jazeera. And that's one of the news sites I keep an eye on because they're pretty good on Asian news. Don't want to look at American news all the time. Good Lord. So America-oriented. I mean, I don't blame them, but, you know, BBC and Guardian and Al Jazeera and Straits Times out of Singapore. There's so many international news outlets that cover the world better. And poor America. Good Lord. Well, good luck. I think America will be pulling out of this sort of psychotic problem it's got right now, or whatever you'd call it. And all the divisiveness and anger and everything. Good Lord. You know, when the anger gets that high and everything, there's all you can do is calm down. You can't really have a good discussion. Good Lord. I'm worried Katrinka's flight's going to get canceled because, you know, people are getting lax. They're being like, well, that's over, but it's obviously not. And, you know, look at what's happened in Texas and Florida and Arizona. And poor America just not dealing with it well. I mean, they're trying to. Individuals are, but they're not together. Everything's divided. You have leadership, which is encouraging chaos. Oh, God. What a mess. Well, good luck. We're going to vote. We vote. I wanted to say something about the kites. You know, where did I see him? I was walking yesterday. I mean, you see guys flying kites just all the time. They go by on this street with these really big kites on bicycles, and I really watch carefully because some pole could be sticking out and behead me or something. I really think about that. And, you know, they're all happy zipping toward the beach to fly their kites. It is such a big deal here. And some of these kites are so big, but they get really big when they get into the competition. We're talking 20, 30, 40 feet. Just enormous trucks bringing them in. They're neighborhood kites like that, or organization kites. But just everybody, it's not just kids. Kids have their training kites. There's, you know, men out there flying kites. And I was watching a guy, and I wonder, wow, you get the kite up, and you just look at it. And I thought, wow, it's like a form of meditation. And it's all over. I mean, you can't count them in the sky now because it's windy. This is the best time of year here. Once you get into June, it just starts getting better and better. It's windy. It's nice. It's almost, it gets a little cool sometimes. You know how I tell the temperature? I swear our thermometer out there, it doesn't mean anything to me. It's always like between 80 and 86 or something. And it's a little lower. I mean, might get below 80 or so, you know, in the early morning or something. But I swear, I mean, I can feel greater differences than that. How I know what the temperature is when I go out in the morning to sit on the settee out there with my tea after my morning meditation, and I don't really notice so much then. Morning meditation and walking meditation and sweeping the courtyard. But when I notice the temperatures, when I go out there with my tea and get my laptop next to it and my iPhone and everything all set up, is how I set the fan. And some mornings now, I do not turn it on. Ceiling fan over my head out there on the porch. And, you know, when it gets hot, and it doesn't get that hot here, but when it gets hot, and it doesn't get hot like in the desert in America or, you know, where I grew up in Texas in the summer, when it gets hot, you know, I might turn it on the third speed. Second speed is pretty common. But, you know, when it starts getting cooler, I'll just leave it on the first speed. And sometimes it'll be like almost long sleeve weather. And I'll just leave it off. And that's how I know that. And then how do I know the humidity? I have a humidity gauge too. You know, there's these wonderful wiping cloths for the kitchen. They're not just cotton or something. I don't know what they're made out of. And they last and last and last. And they're really absorbent. Oh, you can't get them here. Now, we can get them in America. You get really good ones in Europe. I don't know what they're called. Anyway, we have the faucet in the sink is, you know, it's there's hot and cold handles to the right and left of it and on the opposite sides that they should be. I mean, wait a minute. Yeah, the hot is on the right and the cold is on the left. Also, they turn different directions. Hmm. Also, light switches are like that. They can go either way here. So that is not how I'd set it up. I've actually had Mudik, our electrician plumber guy, switch a few things like that. But he couldn't switch the plumbing there. So anyway, then there's a flexible pipe for the sinks. There's two sinks, you know. And over that pipe, I hang that cloth. And it's my humidity gauge. I come in the morning. If there's good humidity, I pick it up and it's wet, you know. It hadn't dried from the day before much. And I can use it to wipe with without doing anything. When the humidity is low, I reach for it and it's stiff. It's gotten dry. So those are my two main, those are my humidity and temperature gauges. Oh, listen, we had a bit of a scare here, you know, I said both on the Monday mini podcast and on the Tuesday podcast for reading Chapter 11 of Crooked Cucumber, I came in and I said, I'm DC, your host. Coming to you from a sleepy Senor with Doggett Bandita and feline Cuchita. Well, Cuchita wasn't around. She disappeared, but I didn't want to say anything about it. And then today it was the third day, and the only time she's been gone that long is when she had worms. Oh, yeah. Wow. She had worms. And I got, she was lying on my table. I have a table in front of the settee. It's made out of rattan. And, you know, I sit there with my legs up and work at it sometimes. I can also work on my lap. But well, I'll have it there when I'm ready to put my legs down and rest them. And so sometimes she naturally gets and wants to lie right where I put my computer, where I put it there. Anyway. So she was up there once, and then she moved away, and where her hiney had been, there were a couple of translucent worms. Really, I mean, you could practically see them. So I took pictures, and I just left them there and called the vet. I sent her the pictures, and she said, I think they're cha-ching is what they're called. So she came over with some pill for Gucci. And it really had to be, she had to be held down. It forced down her. And she ran out for 3 days then, after that. But so she was gone. And, you know, right away, I realized I missed her. Like, when Bondi spent a night at the hotel lodging, the dog kennel, you know, a month ago or so, or a few weeks ago, I went, where's Bondi? She's not here. And then Gucci, gone 3 days without any good reason. But then I started thinking, you know, she's sort of broken her normal habit. Like, I feed them at about 4:30 in the afternoon. Normally, I'd feed Betts in the morning, but Katrinka started then, so I kept it up. And I like it better then, because if you feed them in the morning, if you want to sleep late or something, they'll bug you. They'll be right on top of you. And the way it is now, I'll be working. And when it really, from about 3:30 on, they'll start sitting near me. And then they'll start just staring at me. I mean, Bonnie will be right below me, just staring at me. And I'll talk to her, and I'll say to her, belum, belum. That means not yet in Indonesian. I speak to them in Indonesian. They speak Indonesian. Not yet, not yet. I keep telling her. If I say, look, go lie down. I can't stand this. She'll do that. But, you know, sometimes it won't bug me. And I'll just say, I'll say it's time for dinner. I go, makanan, dinner. And then they run in. We have this whole thing. I did a whole podcast trip on it. And so they'd be the two of them, and I'd feed her first, and Bondi dance around, and then I'd feed Bondi. Well, for a few days there, she wasn't coming in till later. She was sort of sauntering in later. Now, she's fixed, but maybe she can still have a love affair. I mean, I'm fixed, and I have a love affair with Katrinka. And I thought, well, maybe there's something happening out there. She hadn't seemed so hungry. Well, I thought, oh, maybe she's trapped somewhere. But she doesn't have a collar on. And you know what image I have in mind there? When Ken Sawyer was doing redoing the back porch, I think, on Mark and Meg Alexander's home in Healdsburg, California. When they took the old porch out, there was a cat skeleton with, you know, some loose, dry, parched, probably not parched, not in the sun, dry, you know, desiccated cat skin and hair. That it was real old, and the skeleton's collar was caught on a nail. You know, that it was turned sideways, and he went there, and it just didn't figure out to go back. So I think of, you know, horror pictures like that. And also, well, with dogs, you really got to watch out about dogs here. A dog like Bondi, she's part Pomeranian, she's real cute, she's small. You know, she could be sold for a few hundred thousand, like, we bought her for $500,000, that's like about $35. She, you know, and guys go around on motorcycles sometimes, not happening around here much now, or anything. I don't have heard about it recently, you know, picking up dogs. And there's also guys that go around poisoning dogs, taking them to places where people eat dogs. So you really got to watch out. And there's also, sometimes there's just poisons around. Maybe from those guys leaving some of their poison around, waiting for dogs to die so they can get them and people can eat them. Airway, the RW sign in a store indicates that they sell dog meat. It's pretty rare. It's not Balinese that do that. It's people from other islands, like Flores. Flores, maybe Timor, you know, some of the islands here. We had a gardener from Flores that he always barked at, and Yoma had said that's because he eats dog meat. And so the vet said the same thing. Yeah, when we got Bondi and we hadn't named her yet, I said, and Godrinka didn't know what this meant, I said, let's name her Airway. Remember when I said Airway, Matt? That's RW, that's for dog meat. She said, Airway, that's a strange name. I think it'd be cute. And Yoman and the vet said, oh, that's bad. So anyway, but I've never heard of people taking cats. But, you know, our dear friends Deepak and Kira, they were walking with their dog on somewhere, and it ate some poison, died right in front of them on the walk. Ugh, horrors. So we really think of that when Bondi starts wanting to eat something when we're walking. No. Can't do that. All right. So anyway, I was talking to Natasha next door, and Natasha is a name that is used here sometimes, not by Balinese, but people from other islands. She's from Sulawesi, and she's with Steve next door. And anyway, she was talking about, she'd had a cat. who was pregnant. And she said, well, I fed her, but, you know, I didn't want to tell you. She wasn't our cat, but, you know, she was hungry, so I fed her. I said, if you feed her, she's your cat. That's it. You're not going to get rid of her. I told her that when it happened. And then it had kittens. And now she's got the kittens in there, and they're saying, free kittens. Oh, God. Horrors. Well, anyway, she was talking about the kittens they weren't eating. She took them to the vet. And then I heard a cat. And I thought, ooh, that sounds like Coochie. And she was talking to me about that. I said, did you hear that cat? She said, yeah. I said, that sounds like Coochie. So I said, I'm going to run check on that. So it was right near our door, our gate. And so Bunny and I go down. And I go, Coochie. And I don't see her. And I let Bonnie go down the gong by herself. It's dead end. There's no traffic on it. And so I'm opening the gate and everything. And there comes Coochie. Oh, so relieved. Oh, Coochie, hi. Come on. And she sort of sauntered over. And I said, well, come here, come on. Come on. And Bondi came back and saw her and went up and said hi. And they're very close. But Coochie wouldn't get near me. And I said, well, come on. And I don't pick her up and stuff, you know, because she used to be feral. That's not a good idea. Although she's pretty good now. I don't know. You could do that now. I'm just not used to it. But I wanted to pick her up because I missed her, you know, so she wouldn't let me get near her. And then she starts walking away. And then she walks back to Wayan's, who's on the corner. There's one house between us, and she goes under the gate. And I say, hey, Wayan, come here. He's our landlord's son. One of the three sons, and he's the one I know the best. And two of them live in that place. Wayan, I said, that's Coochie. She lives over at our place. He said, yeah. I said, man, she hadn't been coming there, you know. You know anybody's been feeding her? No. I said, well, she's welcome to be here. I don't care. I just was worried about her. So that's it. And then I went home, and you know what I felt like? I felt like in high school when you have a crush on some girl and she likes you and everything. You're going, oh, it's great and this and that. And then, you know, there's something you're used to doing or used to meeting somewhere, and she's not there. You go, well, where is she? And then finally, you know, as you go the longest time, you don't see her, what's happening, and then you see her, and you go, oh, there you are, great, how are you doing, blah, 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 and And she just sort of dances around you. That's what Gucci would do, just sort of dancing around me, rolling on her back. Then if I get close, you walk away. And then your girlfriend you thought starts, you know, and then just sort of ignores you and walks away. I felt like I'd been jilted and walked back home dejected. No, she's out there. Okay, it's all right. Cats are independent. All right. Good Lord, pardon me, pardon me. All right, now we're going to give Anshu Singh a call, and you'll get to hear her. She's pretty cool, and she's our guest for this episode of Life in Bali. So here we go. Let's dial the phone.
Hi, David.
Hi, Anshu.
How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm great.
And at this point, Anshu and I talked about, you know, how long we're going to talk and what our schedules were and, you know, different things, how's Katrinka, stuff that anybody listens to my podcast has heard too many times. And so then we get through with all that stuff, and then I ask this. So, let me see. So, your name is Anshu Singh, S-I-N-G-H, and you're from, where are you from in India?
So, I'm from India. My hometown is a city called Lucknow. It's about 500 kilometers east of Delhi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And you know. First, I'd like. I think it would be good to say what you know to mention your book and mm-hmm. you have what do I call it? An organization or a program. Why don't you just tell us about what you do and about your book?
Ah, okay. Yes, I would love to. So right now, everything I do is pretty much to help people transform their lives and expand their consciousness. And I have few projects around this theme, you can call it, like basically also around like health and wellness. So I have written a book. It's called Pressure to Pleasure, a 7-pillar pathway to living your best life. And the idea behind this book is, as you can tell from the title, to help people, give people a really simple guide to shift their state from a state of stress and pressure that we pretty much as a society, you know, we are being buried under the stress and pressure, and shift the state pretty much maybe even multiple times a day into a state of pleasure and aliveness. So the book has many, many methods, and it has a very clear method that's just documented in the book, which helps people shift this state at a fundamental level. And it also gives exercises that can be done daily to shift the state in a moment. So that's the book. And then I also have a yoga teacher.
I'd say remind us. It's good to repeat the name of the book.
Yes. So the book, the name of the book is Pressure to Pleasure. It's a 7-pillar pathway for living your best life. That is the name of the book. And in addition to this, I also have a yoga teacher training program and where I basically train yoga teachers. And since I'm from India, you know, I have a very, like, a deep knowledge of yoga philosophy and asana practice. And this is something that I'm striving to do to bring more authenticity to the world of yoga. And really people, like, you know, have people embody yoga, because the yoga right now in the Western world, it has become more about, more like an exercise class that's going to give you a big, you know, a better butt, or it's going to tone your body. And in sometimes it has become about, like, you know, Lululemon pants. Like, so, you know, I feel very strongly that yoga is losing its authenticity. And that is one of the things that I'm intending to do through my program, to really bring people back into what is the true essence of yoga. So that's one of my other projects.
Oh, hey, can I ask you a question here, which is namely, what is the true essence of yoga?
Thank you. That's a beautiful question. So for me, the true essence of yoga, I mean, again, it has so many definitions. So I will tell you what I feel is the true essence of yoga. It is to be able to, like, expand our consciousness. So we all have conditioning, right? We have been conditioned to look a certain way or to do a certain things. And what yoga helps us do is to really expand that and to sort of say, no, there is other ways of looking at the world. And yoga philosophy can be a philosophy for life. And it can give us a very, very strong foundation for living our life, and can really help us live in a state of just being, you know, just happy. Like, we are all here not to just live in a life of, like, you know, be stressed out all the time or be angry or just, you know, feel like a victim. So yoga philosophy helps us see a bigger picture. To me, that is the essence.
Yeah.
But again, I'm sure, you know, everybody, you can get a very different answer from different people. But if you look at the, like, the background of yoga, it, you know, the idea was to prepare the body using the breath and using the asana practice to sit in meditation for long hours. That is how yoga came into being.
Oh, is that right?
You know, right, exactly. So if you really look at the history, you know, there are eight limbs of yoga. The yamas and niyamas are the philosophy part of yoga, mm-hmm. You know, how to relate to others and how to how to live your life. And then there is the asana practice, which we are mostly focused on right now. But the asana practice was to have healthy body, so we can, you know, sit in these long hours of meditation. And then the pranayama, that's the fourth limb, which was to help cultivate energy, because many of the yogis, they renounced the world and they went to the Himalayas and they would sit and meditate, and they didn't eat much, right? So breath is how they were getting their energy. And it's just profound when you look at all the different parts of yoga and again how yoga came into being. So they could just really sit and meditate and finally get enlightened and awake.
Mm. Keep going. This is good.
Yeah, I know it was a long. Yes, I mean, it was a long answer to your question.
That wasn't so long.
But I just, yes, I just wanted to give a little bit of background, you know, and which many people are not connected with. Because again, as I said, right now, it has become all about, like, you know, you can control, like, you, it becomes like a gymnastics or a fitness or a competition, but it's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I would say the aim of yoga is to really dissolve our ego and just dissolve into non-existence. And that's when I feel like the true magic happened. I know I'm going really spiritual right now, but but if you really think about it.
That's all right. Feel free.
Like, if you think about it, you know, I mean, we are all here on this planet for a limited amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. And once we connect with that idea that we are going to not exist, or even now, like, once we start to dissolve with nature, with other human beings, it can give us a sense of acceptance of everything that is happening. It can give us a sense of acceptance, deep acceptance of other human beings, deep acceptance of the earth, deep acceptance of all the living beings and the earth, right?
Yeah.
So it helps us, I feel like it helps us dissolve our egos, which I feel is super profound, and I'm working on it. I'm not there yet. That's why it's like, it's something, yeah, but it can really, really help us go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, getting in touch with a bigger picture.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
And for me, like in my personal life story, you know, because I grew up in India, and even though yoga comes from this land, I had a very specific conditioning of how life needed to be. So yoga has really helped me expand that and to really get out of that conditioning and to really live my life fully.
Hmm.
And have more aliveness, basically, in my life.
Now, if someone wanted to learn more about you, I just want to get a few basic facts down. First, they might like to follow you on Facebook. And
yes.
That's good, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So
I have an Instagram.
Yeah, and how do they find you? Do they just write Anshu Singh or what?
So my Instagram handle is anshu.inspires.
Anshu, A-N-S-H-U dot inspire.
Inspires.
Inspired.
Inspires, Anshu Inspires.
Oh, I-N-S-P-I-R-E-S.
Yes.
Oh, Anshu Inspires, got you. And
yes.
Instagram. And what about Facebook?
So Facebook is the same.
Uh-huh. Oh, so that's good.
So people could write facebook.com/Anshu.inspires and they will find me. And also, I have a website.
Yeah.
The address of the website is anshu-sync. .com.
All right.
Anshu,
so
it's Anshu
dash Singh, S-I-N-G-H .com.
Yes. Yes. And on the website, there is information about the yoga teacher training. There is also information about my book. And also, I have a software startup for alternative therapists. So you can find some information about it there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was just going to say that I'm working on, you know, a couple of other projects right now. And actually, this might come as a surprise to you too, also David, that I'm actually building a retreat center outside Ubud.
A what?
A retreat center.
Oh, wow.
So a center for... And again, you know, the idea behind this place is it's a center for transformation and expansion. Like that's the bigger vision,
mm-hmm.
where I am imagining that people would come to this center and we really hold space. They're nurtured and loved and cared for. And then of course we give, you know, there are amazing teachers who give their knowledge. And so people could really expand their consciousness, and it is called Soul Inspire and Eco Sanctuary.
Soul Inspire,
S-O-U-L, Soul Inspire, I-N-S-P-I-R-E, and it's a sanctuary, and it's eco-friendly, so we are calling it an Eco Sanctuary.
Huh, wow, all right.
Yeah. So this is a big one. That's why I'm going to Ubud so much nowadays.
Oh, I want to see it, but not now.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. So now, how did you get into all this?
Oh, like you mean into this whole idea of transformation and expansion?
Yeah. Well, first, let me ask you, what was the philosophical, religious background, in your home?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up in India, and I come from a Sikh family. So Sikhs are it's a different religion, but it stems from religion of Hindu and Muslim. So the founder of the Sikh religion basically was teaching. So he did not intend to found a religion. He only wanted to bring Hindus and Muslims together.
Yeah.
So he started to talk about it. He started to tell people that God is one. And so stop fighting over God. And slowly, slowly over the years, it's a very, very new religion. Like to me, I don't even consider it a religion, to be honest. I just consider it as a philosophy on life.
Yeah. When you say new.
New, I mean, it's only about maybe 600 years old, 500 to
All
600.
right, yeah. See,
So it's relatively new.
that's from a point of view of India, where your history goes back so far.
Exactly.
If you said to somebody
Yeah.
in America it's a new religion, they'd think it was this year.
Relatively, right? I mean, if you think about the main religions like Muslim and Hindu and Christians, So in India, like this is like the fourth. So I think, of course, the majority of Indians are Hindus, and then comes Muslims, and then Christians, and then Sikhs. So we have these four religions in India. But to be honest, I always rejected the religious aspects of any religion because I also grew up kind of Hindu as well. Like I would go to the temples, and I loved it all. But also a part of me wanted more than just like rituals. I wanted to really understand it, but I didn't really get taught the spiritual aspects at that time. But now that I have been outside India for many, many years, now I'm realizing that spirituality is weaved in daily life of Indians. So we don't have to be taught that. And that has been a very profound awakening for me to see that as an outsider. And now I see, Indians live spirituality. We don't just study it, we live it.
Oh, I definitely
So that has
experienced
changed.
that in India.
Yeah,
I'd be in a
exactly.
little tiny tea shop, coffee shop, sitting next to somebody on a bench. And after a minute, they might be talking about cosmic consciousness. But what variety there is. One thing,
Yes.
tell me if this is true. My understanding of the Sikhs and also some of my observations is that they're a little more female friendly than other sects. I'm sure that depends on on other factors like the individual cases and the various
Yes,
strains.
but you're absolutely right. I mean, that was the idea. So if you meet any Sikh, most of the actually pretty much all they would have the Singh, right? So Singh actually means lion.
Yeah.
And but most women, I mean, I'm an exception because somehow my dad didn't give me this last name, but most majority of Sikh women have the last name
Yeah,
Kaur,
I know. I was going to ask you
Kaur.
about that.
Yes, and Kaur actually means princess. That is the meaning of Kaur. So the idea was, again, the idea behind what Guru Nanak Dev Ji was teaching was about equality. So that was about equality, that all the religions are equal, equality that all humans are equal, man, women. And he was also talking about, he was also against the caste system. And that is why the last name Singh exists. So you cannot look at a last name of a person and say, oh, this person is from a lower caste versus this person is from a higher caste, because everybody is Singh.
Oh, well, then I have another question. But my understanding is that the name Singh has been picked up by many different types of people in India, not just the Sikhs, in different places, and people who aren't Sikhs. And would that be because they want to be identified outside of a caste identification?
That's a possibility, because even now, like even in like 21st century, you know, there is still, especially in smaller towns and villages, you can still see the caste system is still pretty alive.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's, you know, and how women are treated of the lower caste, and my God, it's pretty terrible.
Oh,
so,
yeah. No, I've run into plenty of heavy caste stuff, and you know, things like a recognized Kabir singer of Kabir poetry, and couldn't go to this particular village because of his caste. And just so many times things like that, but more outside of the busy city, right? Don't the cities tend to be more modern and cosmopolitan?
Yes, in the cities, you know, it's all good, but I mean, typically, still the people of lower caste are pretty poor, you know.
Yeah.
And they're the working class. But you know, I think right now in India, it's all about education.
Yeah.
So many lower caste people, they, you know, they get educated, and, you know, they're all over the world. And I think, I mean, it's just ridiculous, this whole idea of the lower caste and high caste in my mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's changing. And India used to have they would have, what is it called? Like they would have in universities and colleges, they would have certain seats reserved. They call it scheduled caste and scheduled tribe. And for these people, they would have some quota in government jobs and in colleges and universities to lift their status. It's so interesting, and it's fascinating.
Well, what do you think about Hinduism in Bali? How would you compare it or describe it? And Hinduism and caste in Bali.
So the way the Hinduism is, I believe it's for example, in India, you cannot wear shoes inside temples. And in many temples, you need to be covering your head to go inside a temple. Mm-hmm. But here it's completely different. So I believe that it's a very ancient form of Hinduism that's still alive here in Bali. And it's also combined with the animalistic aspects of the island, I would
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
And that is why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at the offerings and stuff that they do, like in India, most Hindus are vegetarians, and we would not, you know, we don't kill animals. Of course, not everybody, but that's the thing. But here, and I know, like, even in India, there was this aspect of Hinduism where there were many offerings given in form of, like sacrifices of animals, and in some cases, even sacrifices of humans.
Mm.
So it feels like to me that it is from that ancient times. But it's also amazing for me, the spirituality in Bali. So what I feel that in Bali, like talking to the Balinese and looking at their rituals, that they're more connected to spirituality also. It's because in India, for many Hindus, it has become more like a ritual,
mm-hmm.
or more like this is how I should do it. And sometimes I feel that people forget the spiritual aspect in it. But yeah, I feel in Bali it's still very present,
Yeah.
the spirituality, which I absolutely love. And of course, Nepi is like one of my favorite holidays of Bali. And I wish the whole world did Nepi, right? A day to just find stillness. And I wish India did that, you know, just because again in India, I mean, religion has a lot of like shadow. There's dark side of religion in India, you know. And and I wish doing something like Nepi, it helps us contemplate and it helps us really slow down and really try to understand the meaning of religion.
The caste in Bali seems to me like caste light compared to India.
You know, I haven't looked at the caste stuff in Bali. I mean, I know it's there, but it doesn't seem, I mean, from where I am observing, it doesn't seem so prevalent, but maybe it's still there. I don't know.
There's a book I read about women in Bali looking at a few generations of them. It's really nice, but I can't remember the name. That it centered around a woman who'd married down in caste, and it did affect her relationship with family. You know, there were definite consequences of having the caste identification. And so I'm sure there's a lot happening that we don't see like that, but
Yes,
still it I
exactly.
still it's nothing compared to India.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. So yeah, as I said, I grew up a Sikh, and then I went to America when I was 23 years old. So in America, I feel like my consciousness started to expand. I started to see other ways of how people live, you know, like coming from like this where everything is according to the rules of family or the society, and coming from a place of so much shame and guilt, like because in India there's a lot of shaming if you don't follow the way one needs to live, and there's a lot of fear. But looking at Americans and how in America it was more about individualistic way of being, you know, this is how I want it. And it really sort of helped me expand my consciousness, I would say, moving to America.
Oh,
And then from
that's so interesting.
in some ways, not in spiritual way, but just like you know, you've heard this thing, right? Like the frog is in the well, and he thinks that frog thinks that that's the world.
Yeah.
Until you get out of that well and you say, oh, there's more in the world, right? So it
Right.
was like that for me.
Right.
And then, you know, traveling around the world, like that really helped me like gain so much. Like I learned so much from traveling and, you know, traveling in different countries, different perspectives, knowing people from different countries.
Yeah.
And then moving to Bali 16 years later, so spending 16 years in America and then moving to Bali was like Bali is where my spiritual consciousness expanded, I would say.
What, when did you come here?
So about 8 years ago.
Oh, you came here 8 years ago. Oh, yeah. And may I ask, what did you do in America?
I'm sorry?
What did you do in America? What brought you to
Oh,
America to begin with?
so my background is actually, so my profession is actually software engineering.
Yeah.
So I studied in India. I did my master's of engineering in India, and then I started to work for a software company. So that's what I did in America. I was in Silicon Valley as a software architect and as a basically an engineering manager. Just building software products, which I love, which I still do. I mean, I still help businesses get started, and I have a software startup as well. And you know, I was thinking at some point in time in my life that I'm done with software, but I actually love that too, because it satisfies my left brain and the analytical thinking and ability to create something world. Like, software has changed our lives. So it's very exciting for me to continue to build software. But I don't do programming anymore. I do more of visioning. You know, like I would call myself a visionary. So if somebody has an idea, I can take this idea and I can bring it to life. So that's what I did in America, and I still do a little bit of it, not full time.
Oh, that's really interesting. And what brought you to Bali? Why did you come to Bali?
Oh, wow. So I came to Bali when my younger daughter, had just turned 6 months old. So what had happened was, okay, so I'm going to backtrack a little
bit.
Well, my first daughter was born in 2009. And when she was born, I really started to question the way I was living my life. Because I was like, so what's the point of working so hard when I'm leaving my little baby with a nanny and going to work, you know? And it just was not feeling good. And I feel, something had fundamentally changed in me. That career wasn't so important. I wanted to be a mother. And I was, questioning it. And I was getting burned out by trying to do it all, by trying to be a perfect wife and having a home and progressing in my career and being a mom. Like, I was really, really getting burnt. So then when I was pregnant with my second one, I basically stopped working at that time. I actually lost my job, which was like a blessing in disguise, because that gave me a little bit of time to just relax, because I had always been working. And so when my second one was born, the first word that came out of my mouth the moment she came out of my belly is, let's move to Bali. So then we started to prepare to move to Bali. And we were moving to Bali only for 1 year. That was the idea, because I wanted to take some time off and be with my kids when they're still little, so I could enjoy them being a baby, you know, them being like a toddler and baby. And we came here for like about just a year, but in that 1 year, things started to change in my life. Like, I did my yoga teacher training at that time, and that was a big expansion of consciousness for me.
You did yoga teacher training at Power of Now?
I did, yes.
Didn't you become a teacher there?
Yes, I became a teacher, and then I even owned that business for a while. So I was a business partner at Power of Now for a year. It's Power of Now Oasis. And so basically at that yoga teacher training, when I taught my first yoga class, like, you know, as part of the training curriculum, we had to teach 90-minute class. And I stood in front of the group, and I started to teach. And the way I felt when I was teaching that class, I had never felt in my life before. Like, my heart was so open, and I felt, wow. I mean, I can't even describe it, David. Like, I felt like this is what I'm born to do, to teach. And why have I not been doing this before, you know? Like, I my life's purpose kind of came in front of me. Like, that's what I'm supposed to do. So I was like, okay, I can't do software anymore. I really have to teach. That's what happened. I was just like kind of feeling that moment for a moment, for feeling, you know, just connecting to that feeling. And even today, till date, you know, 8 years later, I teach a yoga class and I feel exactly the same way. I feel, wow. I mean, I just love it. I just came from teaching a class at Koa Shala, and it's my heart just feels so open, so like it feels like I just love it. So I love teaching, and I love like not just yoga teaching. Like I love hosting cacao ceremonies. I you know, I teach workshops based on my book, like any kind of teaching that expands people's consciousness and it helps them transform. I love to do that.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. You say you were just teaching a yoga class. Can you describe, was that online or with people, or with people?
Oh, this one I was teaching at a studio with people. Yeah, with social distancing, of course.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I really think people need to get out. What do you think about the beach being closed since you live about 1 minute walk from it?
Yes, I mean, it has been so sad because nature is so therapeutic. Nature heals us. And to close nature is like, it's so sad. Like we humans need, you know, swimming in the ocean and just, you know, being in the forest and being near the trees. I mean, I think that really, really is deeply therapeutic, and it helps keep our immune system strong.
Mm.
So I feel it's just pretty sad that the beach has been closed and that people think that somehow we're going to, I know we don't want, you know, people gathering too much by the ocean, and that's what happens, especially by local beach, because there are so many Balinese and everybody comes together. But maybe we could have the beach open with fewer people. We could always control how many people are going.
Well,
but yeah, it's so important.
I don't think, you know, right here, we're in the area where we live, even when the tourist season's going, it never gets real crowded. I think all they need is strict guidelines. Actually, they had a big sign with fairly strict guidelines up. And, you know, I read on Sonora Community that beaches will be opening up with very strict protocol. But
no, but you know, the local beach is open now for going for walks and stuff.
Oh, it is?
So I've been going. Yes, it's so good, David.
Oh, I didn't know that. How long has it been open?
Yes. You know, I started just going, like, I want to say last week. So I tried, and it looks like it's closed. But then, you know, as long as you're wearing a mask, it's okay. You can go for a walk, because I saw some bicyclists going.
Yeah, well.
But they're not allowing a lot of people.
Yeah. I've gone in, too.
But walking is.
I've gone in. Yeah. You know, where you live, there's a permanent station there.
Yes, but they make sure you're wearing a mask, but then that's it.
Yeah, well, where I live, you know, I can go your way, but if I go to the left, there's the, you know, the police box gone. There's nobody guarding that, so I know we can go in. Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear you say.
Yeah,
I think we'll go take a walk to the beach today. We have gone. I have gone swimming. But I thought I was sneaking in and because there's nobody there. I mean, you know, they're very, well, not nobody. I'll see maybe some guys flying a kite and, you know, a couple with some dogs and, you know, just a few people here and there. Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
You know, Chris has invited me to come swim at Colonial House too, so I can go there anytime.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, you know, I think one thing that would come to mind when we heard about your daughters and you coming here is I think you were married in America, right?
Yes.
And,
yes, I was.
And I believe, and then you and your husband split up, but
yes.
But I have met him in your home. also staying there,
Yes.
right?
Because yes, they're co-parenting. So yeah, we go to each other's houses and yeah, we try to be friends.
That's very nice, very nice. So is he living here now?
Yes, he has always lived in Bali, but he was also spending a lot of time in America. But now, this, of course, because of COVID, he has been here. So he hasn't gone traveling. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So your daughter's and your daughter's can be with him and you and
Yeah. They go back and forth.
yeah.
And yeah, so they both get, I feel like we both can be fully present with them. When they come to me, then, then I can be present with them. And when they're with him, then he plays with them. So it's good. They're getting, I think, the best of us. David, would you hold on for just a moment, please?
Absolutely.
Okay, hold on.
Bum 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 Do 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 bum 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 bum.
Okay, I'm back, David.
All right. Well, is there, would you like to expand on your teaching on
Yes. So yes, I'll happy to share a little bit more. I just want to say that I feel my life is so complete. I'm grateful beyond. Like beyond measure. Like I'm so grateful that I am living my life's purpose, that I have two amazing children, that I just feel really complete with my life. And one of the things that I'm working on is, actually I'm writing another book, and this book is on relationships. Just because of my own, breakup and like what I witness in the world in terms of how romantic or intimate relationships are, and I don't have a final title yet, but it's about having conscious, wholesome partnership instead of a traditional codependent relationship, and this is like my own quest right now on becoming wholesome in my own self and being so conscious, and then connecting with somebody. And I would, like if I have a desire right now, is desire is to meet a partner with whom I can have a conscious relationship, a conscious, mindful relationship. And that is the area in which I am expanding right now. And I'm expanding by writing about it as well. And just because I have done so much learning around relationships in terms of conscious communication, how to relate with other people from a place of authenticity and vulnerability, and also like looking at Tantra as the foundation of it all. And Tantra, again, I can do a whole spiel on Tantra because in the Western world it has become so much about sexuality, but it's like sexuality is like a minuscule part of Tantra, right? But applying the principles of Tantra in life and in a relationship can be really, really profound.
Well, that just makes me want to ask you, what are, tell us more about Tantra.
So this is again my own, because Tantra is such a vast subject, David, that it's like there are so many scholars who have studied it. But to me, what Tantra signifies is deep presence, like really being present, and energy. And what I mean by deep presence is being present with ourselves, our emotions, like really knowing ourselves at a deeper level. And that whole authenticity and vulnerability that I'm talking about, but being present with ourselves so we can be present with another person, with other beings, and not just in an intimate partnership, but with anybody. We can be present with nature, right? And really feel nature. We can be present with our food, you know, and really connect with what we put in our bodies. We can be present
with
our
friends. I lost you. You might come back, but right now I do not hear you. All right, the last thing you said was food. Let's see. All right, let me guess what happened. All right, I will guess her phone died. Let's see. I'm going to hang up and call her back. All right, there we go.
Hi, David.
Hi.
You know, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Yeah. Well, that sort of thing happens. All right. The last thing I heard was we should be conscious of what we put in our mouths.
Yes, but yes, what I was talking about is Tantra is like about being present, right? So when we're eating, so many people are eating, like I used to do that, like sitting in the car, driving, eating a croissant and eating and drinking coffee without any mindfulness or without any pleasure. It was just, and that's how many people eat their food, sitting in front of television. So Tantra could be like really enjoying and taking pleasure with food. And then we probably wouldn't eat so much junk that we normally tend to eat.
I have very strong feelings about that. You know, I'm a blabbermouth.
Yeah.
I love to talk and I talk too much. But I really like to eat mainly silently and pay attention to the food. And
exactly.
You know, I will tell people that. And then as soon as we start eating, they start talking. And I've got friends that just talk constantly through the entire meal. And but Katrinka and I don't. But
yeah,
we talk after
it. It's beautiful.
I agree with you. I don't like to eat and do other things. I like to just eat. Also, mm-hmm. when I smoked, I just liked to smoke. I didn't like walking and smoking or doing something else or smoking. But the best thing about smoking was quitting smoking.
Yeah, I mean, it's about being present, right? You're being present with whatever it is that you're doing. I mean, it's similar to mindfulness, but I think Tantra brings in the element of sensuality and pleasure in it too, to really be feeling it.
Yeah.
And it brings the emotional aspect in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so feeling the aliveness or feeling everything that you're feeling instead of shutting it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, same presence or same aliveness, feeling that in all your conversations with friends or, you know, with everything. I mean, Tantra brings playfulness in everything, basically.
Yeah, 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 that's well said. That's well said.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and then also there is the whole energetic aspect of Tantra that helps us work on cultivating our energy. And my first book really talks about that as well, like how to cultivate that energy.
Mm.
And as I was saying, like using these principles of Tantra, when we connect with the intimate partner, it can really be wonderful for the relationship
mm-hmm.
or for the partnership. I actually don't even want to call it relationships anymore. It's more of a partnership. It's more about sharing the life.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. So that's what I had to say. I can keep going, but I know it's...
well, you know, that's awful good. I think I really appreciate it. I You have many, many good things to say, many interesting things to say. I learned things. I learned about the retreat you're making. I want to see that. All right, go be with your kids.
Okay. Bye. Thank you, David. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So thanks a lot, Anshu Singh. Well, maybe we can have her back on later, hear more about her center that she's opening here. She's got a lot of energy for it. Well, that wraps up today's Life in Bali. Give you a little taste of what it's like here from my limited perspective and the broader perspective of some of the people I've had the pleasure of coming to know. And we'll be back in a week. I don't know who with. We'll see. Somebody interesting. It might just be, some local person I know, like a masseuse or just somebody who speaks English. There's a driver I know who speaks really good English, and he's got an interesting story. Really nice guy. He's Monea's landlord, really. Monea built an amazing place on his property. I mean, it's like a small palace. It'll be a tourist destination. Anyway, his name's Wayan, which means the firstborn, either for male or female. It's the most common name here. I mean, there's a lot of them. There's a whole lot of them. And I'll tell you about names later. That's it. This is D.C. Booba of Cuc Audio and Cuc Archives saying thanks for joining us. Thanks for keeping us company. We're coming to you from Sleepy Sanur with Doggett Bandita and somewhere near here, feline Cuchita. Someday soon, fingers crossed, dear lovely Katrinka, wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.